Welcome to another episode on the Duan Marrero podcast. This is your host, Duan Marrero, episode 210. We came a long way, 3 years and counting. And this episode is pretty special to me. She's a grinder. She's been working with the NCAA for over a decade. She is the Associate Director of Enforcement, the one and only Courtney Moore. Good morning. Pleasure.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
How's everything been? Spring is around the corner. Final Four is about to take place within a month or so. Where's the Final Four at?
Men's Final Four is in Phoenix this year, and the women's Final Four is in Cleveland.
Big
So
time.
pretty close for Cleveland.
What's it like working for the NCAA? I know you get a lot of calls, emails. The job that you do could be daunting at times, but you've been able to, navigate that and balance the challenges that comes with it. But overall, what's it like, being in that position and working for the NCAA?
Yeah, I really love my job. There's times, like you said, of course, every job has those when it's really stressful, and can kind of wear you down. But the department I'm in the enforcement department. The people I work with in that department, are fantastic. Everyone works really hard and cares about, what they're doing. And then the people I work with outside, the coaches, non-scholastic or, our D1 coaches, the athletes, the parents. I mean, I appreciate that too. I have good relationships there. And so all around, I like the job.
I think you just gave me another question. You said the
Oh.
Scholastic League. What do they think of the Scholastic League? Because obviously it's not your traditional league, right?
Right.
With Nike and the powerhouse that I kind of cover day to day. What is their thoughts? Because it's just not their traditional IHSA basketball.
No, it's not. But we've seen more and more in the time that I've been at the NCAA, more and more prep school, private school, and a lot of kids are just going that route. So it's not traditionally what we, I guess our coaches are probably used to as far as the traditional high school approach. But I think that from our perspective, I mean, we don't have a problem with it,
Right.
and the basketball's good, so.
How did you crawl into the space of the NCAA, and what college did you attend to? Was that kind of the bridge to get to the NCAA, or did you know that you wanted to end up there at some point?
Actually, I kind of came through n none of that, no. So I went to a small liberal arts school, Berea College. It's about 30 minutes south of Lexington, Kentucky. At the time, it was NAIA. It's now a D3 school. I went there, and then I went to law school at Chase College of Law, which is at Northern Kentucky University. Never really thought I would work in athletics. I like watching basketball. I like watching sports, but I am not athletically inclined. Didn't play. So I worked in family law and then in asset forfeiture within the US Attorney's Office. And we made a couple of moves, and I had some little kids. And when we moved here to Indianapolis, the best fit for me was kind of a job that had some flexibility. And
Right.
I knew some people at the NCA, and I just kind of started in, loved it, and then stuck around, and now I'm here 12 years later.
Wow. So Kentucky base. That's like my second home.
Yeah, I'm from Louisville, so
Really?
yeah.
So when I left DePaul, and before you can transfer, I was there 2.5 years with Oliver Purnell. Great guy, great mentor. And I went to Chipola College. And Patrick Blake was my head coach there, because now you can just transfer and play. But my camp in Fort Wayne thought it was best to go to JUCO. And I had Patrick Blake, who went to Eastern Kentucky as an assistant, but now he's at Georgia. But then Sean Woods, who's from Gary, Indiana, told me to come to Morehead State. And it kind of rebuild my resume, and that's where I fell in love with Kentucky, getting it's like a second home. And I just went back to Kentucky for our homecoming. And so yeah, that's pretty dope to hear that you went to Louisville and you have the Kentucky roots.
Yeah, and I have a lot of friends that went to Morehead State. It's a great school, and Yeah, that's funny that I didn't realize you had the connection there either, so.
Yeah, it was you have to be open-minded to go to Morehead State. It's a very unique, special
Yeah.
place. But all of my mentors stayed in Lexington. And so that's why every time I go back, I try to go to a UK game or go to
Yeah.
Morehead. And I want to give a shout out to Morehead because they're number one in the OVC right now.
Yeah, that's
Yeah.
awesome.
So that was, yeah, that's really good to know. The NCAA, though, let's go back to that. Like, NCAA always gets a bad rap for it in the end. From the, they's like, ah, they don't like that athletes are getting paid, right? Like the NIL and so forth. You know, how can you give a perception to the audience that just read headlines and really don't know, like, kind of what the NCAA goes through, you know, in that matter?
Yeah, well, I would say we don't have a problem at all with NIL. I do think just in general, probably things that go across, ESPN or things that might come up you see on the D1 ticker or just information out there in general. I'm not sure everyone recognizes that the national office in Indianapolis, we don't create the rules. Those are
Right.
created through the membership, which are the schools. And we adopt it and then my department, enforces those rules that everyone has agreed to and that have been created. So when no one usually likes the people that might get your school might get dinged for something, or there might
Right.
be a case with that school that you like. However, those schools and those conferences, are all where there's involvement. It's not that we write the rules,
Right.
it's that we just enforce them. So I don't
Yeah.
think a lot of people realize that. I think most people think we do all of it, like in-house, just in Indianapolis, and we're creating
Yeah.
those rules, but that's not actually kind of how that works.
Well, that's good to touch on that. And so, what is your day-to-day responsibilities for people who are listening and they see your title, but they really don't understand yet what you do?
Yeah. So my job is really is actually kind of an odd little area of enforcement and probably the NCA in general, because the majority work with the membership and current student athletes and our coaches. And I work with prospective student athletes and travel team, high school coaches. So everything I deal with is really outside of the membership. What I do or what we do in basketball certification is, approve events so that as a service to our D1 coaches so that they can go out and attend and evaluate and recruit at those non-scholastic or travel team, some people just call it AAU, those
Right.
events that are within their calendar that they can go out. So
I saw the NCAA switched it too. A lot of coaches were pretty upset about when the coaches get to come out. And
well, that was there was the an ABC, which is the Basketball Coaches Association, for boys or men. They proposed some changes to that calendar. Like we don't have April anymore for guys. We just have a May date, but that was because of that transfer portal window. Coaches really
right.
didn't want to be out during that time trying to recruit, in both ways. And then we have the 2 weekends in July, and then the college basketball academies. But yeah, the college, I'm sorry, the NABC brought forth that proposal to the Men's Basketball Oversight Committee, and then that was adopted through there. So again, that would be an area where
Well,
people think that we, like me, or
right.
someone that's an employee makes those changes, and we don't. That has to come through our process. And most of the time, anything related to the recruiting calendar, either the Women's Basketball Oversight Committee, Men's Basketball Oversight Committee, or the two coaches associations are definitely highly involved there.
That makes sense because I was looking at the calendar and I think they're coming. I don't know it off the top, but I think it's like maybe April or May where they could come out once a month. I think it's April. I don't have it exclusively by me, but
For the guys,
Yeah, for the guys.
they don't have any live dates in April this year.
Yeah, so I think it's May then.
Yeah,
Because
then we've
I.
got a May 17th through the 19th.
Yep, 17th through the 19th. And that's for those that's listening, that's the 2024 Nike EYBL will be in Indy, 17th through the 19th. And then the 24th through the 27th is in Kansas. And then at July 12th through the 21st, Beach Jam.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. And so when I was growing up, one of my guys, his name is Jason Hawkins. He's used to be at Valpo, but now he's at Trinity Christian College in Palos Hills, Illinois. Great guy. But he got me introduced to the Clearinghouse. And Marvin Ray, God rest his soul, he was my coach at Bowman. And it was my freshman year in high school where he preached, hey, you guys need to sign up because you guys are starting to get recruited. You know, is that process still the same? Has things changed where the sooner the better you sign up for the clearinghouse? If you could take me down that route.
So it's changed a little bit. It's not the clearinghouse anymore. It's called the
Got it.
Eligibility Center, but everybody
Yeah.
still refers to it
Got
as
it.
the clearinghouse. And with the basketball certification system, which is the system that I deal with, where the kids come in and register there, we now push them out to the eligibility center. So they
Got
don't
it.
necessarily, if they're a basketball and they're playing for a travel team, they aren't going to have to go to the eligibility center on their own. So usually all of the kids now have an account. If they've been playing travel ball and at live events, you know, eighth, ninth grade, they've got an account.
Right.
So that is a plus just because they're getting that earlier, and then the eligibility center can reach out earlier and educate. The difference is also now there's a free profile account, which is what you get when you go through our system. And everybody, that's fine for everyone. Eventually, if you are being actively recruited by a D1 or D2 school, you'll need to pay to upgrade that account in the eligibility center to a certification account. But otherwise, you know, and then of course there's a waiver process if you financially can't afford that fee. I think it's
What's the
110
fee?
maybe. I
Okay.
think it's 110. It used to be 90, but I believe it went up at the eligibility center. There's no fee though with our system or with that free account. So to get started, everyone should just, you know, they're already going into our system because they have to be there to be able to play for their team at a live event. So once they have that free account, if I always just preach that don't go ahead and pay that money. You don't need to, unless you're being actively recruited and coaches are saying, what's your NCAA ID number? Or, you know, you're there, that's being asked for, then that's when you would want to upgrade that account.
Nice. So there you
Usually, I
guys.
think sophomore or junior year, probably
And
sophomore year.
that's information like that most people don't get and most people don't read anyway, right? It could be bold and fine print and in that context. So thanks for explaining that. I do want to ask this question. What are some of the challenges that you face and some of the hurdles that you have to go over with coaches, right? Because they can be passive aggressive. And like I told you before we went online, some parents that are, they just love their kid, right? And sometimes they love their kid too much to where they're not living in reality about where their kid is potentially at. So how do you deal with some of the coaches who are passive aggressive about their kid getting eligible or, you know, making this happen?
And do you mean like the travel team coaches or
Let's say
the
travel team
yeah, because I
coaches
was
are
like, I
the
really
worst.
wouldn't
Yeah, the travel team coaches are the worst. They're excited for spring more than they are with fall.
yeah, I think generally the issues that we have there just have to do with them, even though they do it every year, you know, renewing their information in the basketball certification system and their kids doing that, you know, because their kids aren't going to be able to play at that live period unless they are in our system. And that's an annual process. And I think the biggest problem with making sure those kids are eligible in that sense, meaning to be able to play for their team to be viewed by D1 coaches, that's probably the biggest headache that we have is doing it timely and getting it done ahead of time and not showing up in Indy at, you know, the EYBL event and not having your team registered,
Right.
and then you've got like a delay there and some issues. So timeliness is probably the biggest thing, and just I don't know. I think that's across the board, maybe at all levels of
Yeah,
coaching,
especially
that you're not good on time.
I saw I, yeah I mean for the most part I remember just hearing coaches telling their players, hey, like you need to get this done before this time, before it hits midnight. And observing you at Adidas, so many coaches were approaching you and having all these questions, and you were able to tackle it and process it and give them a correct answer. But mainly, I think the common solution was, but you just got to be patient.
I'm not always the most patient person,
Right.
but I think this job has helped me in that area a lot. Like, I've learned that, and I have to take a step back. Remember, this is what I do for a living. Like, I'm
Right.
in it all the time.
Right.
But they're not. I mean, it's just a hurdle. Usually it's viewed as a hurdle for them. They just something they have to get through so they can go coach,
Right.
right? And so being more understanding in that way, I think is helpful.
And I think something, and I love what I do, right? And I'm in the content space on the internet, featuring five-star kids. I always say, I told you, YouTuber, or I categorize it as TMZ, right? I'm the guy with following this guy and his camera crew, but the only difference is I'm putting them on a much bigger platform than what their camera crew is posting them on. And I love what I do, and I don't feel bad for saying it. I don't take my job for granted. I'm very blessed and grateful to do what I do, and that's one thing that I appreciate that you just said, that you love your job, because many of my friends hate their job.
Yeah, no, I do love the job. It's stressful, like you said, and it's hard work. But I feel like you don't. I guess I see a difference. Sometimes there's jobs where you just, and this is fine either way. I talk to my kids about this. You either have a career that becomes kind of part of who you are, and then there's other people who have a job that it just affords them the life that they want to do outside of their work, right? And I think I'm more along the lines of my job and my career is like part of who I am, and is not, yes, it does afford me benefits and things like that, but it's not a clock in, clock out, and so I can go do what I want with my life. It's
Right.
an integral part of who I am and what I, so.
And I think, because again, I when people say balance, you have to be the QB1 for your job, right? And tell your team, here are my boundaries, because the job isn't clock in 9 to 5. So I have to over communicate with my team to let them know, here are my boundaries. So if you call me like after 9, the chances of me responding, depending on how urgent it is going to be minor. And so, yeah, how often do you have to create those boundaries, or do you, for your team, to let you know, like, hey, I do have a personal life, but I'll circle back with you first thing tomorrow.
I actually have to do it more for myself than with the people I work with. They're really good about it, but when it's, late April or this year, it'll be like early May and it's a lot of chaos.
Right.
I have to do it for myself because I'll be bad and not that I'm a workaholic, but I
Right.
want to make sure we do want every kid to be able to play, right? And we
Right.
want the coaches to be able to coach. So I'll work late or take calls very late. And I just have to, I have learned over the years to do that less and less. So like try to set some boundaries, some timelines in there. I mean, they might be 16-hour days or more, but you still have to step away. Keep your
What?
sanity.
Absolutely. And we kind of talk about the impatience, the challenges with, travel coaches. It's oversaturated market as well, with so many travel coaches who are trying to reach that prestigious stage, but it's a grind. Now, what's some of the things that make you smile about your job? It's like, what trip are you looking forward to going to this spring, if there is one?
I always like the travel. It's funny because I, before it starts, I'm looking forward to the trips, and then like by the time it's over with, I'm like, okay, I don't want to travel for a while, but
Right.
then leading up again, I'm ready to go. So it'll be nice that the EYBL is here in, Indiana, the Indy area this year. That'll be fun. It's always, good to go to. And then I know I'll be going down to Adidas too, and they're in Texas, I think.
Yeah.
I usually try to hit all the shoes, girls and the guys, and that's just the largest portion of our coaches. So we have a small staff, so I've gotta, we gotta go where our coaches are.
Right.
So those trips are always fun. I enjoy that. The first live period is always a little rough, just that first night for check-in and getting the teams through. But after that, it's fun to just watch, when I get out of the back room and get to actually watch basketball, that's fun.
Yeah, no, I agree. I went to cover the Chicago Public League Championship, and Chicago basketball is in at its peak, right? A lot of the players now kind of transition to a scholastic school. And I'm fortunate to go to Lehigh during NBA All-Star weekend. And those are the trips that I don't take for granted,
Yeah.
because post basketball, a lot of players still go through that phase of not being known as a basketball player anymore, right? You don't get those perks. And I still see some of my teammates still trying to pursue that. And so I know that this could be taken away at any moment. So I'm fulfilled, and I appreciate you coming on here this morning, taking the time out of your day. Just talk about the NCAA, you're in your career, and hopefully inspiring the next young lady coming up want to fulfill your shoes.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Just want to remind all the if there
Yeah.
are travel team coaches
Yeah.
listening that they need to get their gold license and they can register in the
How
in
much
our
is that?
system now it's open.
How much is the GO license? And there's are some programs who have been around for some time, or startup programs that do reimburse you for your GO license. How do you know
Yeah.
how much does that
Yeah,
cost?
right now it's 68 domestic. I mean, that's the base price. So it's pretty reasonably priced right now, but in April and May, that price goes up to over 100 because it's more of a deterrent because there's such high volume during that time. So go ahead and get those now, and then yeah, then they can come to our system, the basketball certification system, and get through that, and then they'll be good to go. So.
And that's for certified events only, or all events?
That's for certified events. So
Okay.
you only have to do that for the certified events each year.
Awesome. Well, thanks for laying those nuggets out for the coaches, because they do need to hear that. And
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Episode 210, guys. Hit subscribe, leave a review, and always appreciate you all for taking the time out of you all's day to listen.